This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Tax increment financing, or TIFs. A TIF allows a city's downtown development authority to capture a portion of the city's taxes, set it aside to use for economic development, to clear up blighted neighborhoods, attract new business. There's plenty of good that can be done with a TIF, but it all happens without taxpayers knowing what's being done with their tax dollars. And that's raising concerns across the nation, including here in Michigan. David Bieri is an associate assistant professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Michigan. David, give us an example of how a TIF works, TIF 101, if you will.
Well, Cynthia, thanks for having me on the program. TIFs, as you said in your introduction, they're a specific type of financing mechanism, a type of financing that's available for local government. It's a way of earmarking taxes. It's usually applied to property taxes, and it affords local governments a type of flexibility to earmark specific taxes to engage in development. Many downtown authorities do this in the state of Michigan. There are other types. There are roughly eight types of authorities in the state of Michigan that can engage in that type of financing. And so to give you specific examples, they can range from the good to the ugly in the state.
Give us an example of a good. What's a good, solid use of a TIF?
In the early 2000s, TIF financing was allowed in smart zones around the state and from places, economically depressed places from Kalamazoo to Detroit, were able to use that specific financing mechanism to do some good in terms of addressing blight. There is a lot of good examples of brownfield mitigation that's being done across the state. Mm-hmm. And so there is plenty of good, in inverted commas, that comes with it. But as you introduced, one of the key problems is the accountability mechanism.
So before we get into accountability, give us an example of the ugly.
I think at the forefront of everybody's minds is a development in Bloomfield Hills, Bloomfield Park, which in a sense curiously created blight rather than mitigating it. And so in that sense, it created a situation where we now have a sort of a modern version of the type of blight that people are most familiar with from downtown Detroit.
Anyone who's driven north on Telegraph, north of Square Lake, look on the right, and it looks like this post-apocalyptic thing.
Indeed.
That just sits there.
That sits there, and I know that people, there are a huge amount of efforts in the state and else beyond the state, too, to address this. And I know from reliable sources that there is a lot of activity in the works to address this situation that will interestingly involve more TIF financing.
So, as you say, it ranges from the ugly, like that Bloomfield development, to the good. But what seems to underscore all of them is the lack of transparency.
Yes, the lack of transparency. And associated with that, you know, you might say, why is that so important? I think it's important for two reasons. The first reason is that in a democracy, as part of the general accountability mechanisms for the luxury that we have to tax ourselves, that we the people decide on how much taxes we want to pay, and we delegate that responsibility to raising the taxes then to various levels of government, from the federal government to state and local government. In return, we have what we term as sort of an accountability mechanism, whereby how the money is spent usually happens through elected officials. And we have the power at the ballot box to express our dissatisfaction with how the public officials spend our money. In the cases of TIFs, in principle, the accountability mechanism is there, but it's somewhat watered down. And it happens in two steps, whereby elected officials appoint people to take care of these special districts.
So they're not elected.
They're not elected. They're appointed. That in and of itself is not a problem because we have other unelected officials in government who do a very good job. I give you an example at the Fed. The people don't elect the chairman or the chairperson of the Fed. It's Congress or the president who appoints them. But there is a very, very strict accountability mechanism whereby the people at the Fed have to come to in front of Congress, the Humphrey Hawkins testimonies, and they give an account of what they're up to, and they can be queried by Congress. In the case of TIF districts and their appointed officials, that accountability mechanism is partly through disclosure, through regular reporting to the state. And as some of our research has indicated, that disclosure mechanism doesn't function particularly well.
How poorly does it function?
Well, we have found out that roughly up to one in five authorities report. So about 20 to 30% of authorities do regular reporting, and it's you know, in a sense that is not about finger pointing, mm-hmm. but it's about disclosing a state of affairs where a regulatory mechanism isn't functioning to its best potential.
So what we're saying is only about 20% are saying, okay, taxpayers, here's how much we've spent of your tax money and here's what we've done with it.
Indeed. I mean, they disclose it occasionally in ways that are not necessarily required by the state. So another subtle point perhaps for the listeners is that disclosure isn't something voluntary. There is a specific type of a disclosure that the state mandates, and that disclosure isn't as great. So it's the same with, we say, you know, a bank that gets its deposits covered by the FDIC. It doesn't have voluntary disclosure. The FDIC mandates how the financial regulatory disclosure should take place. And it's the same with TIFs. And so while some TIF authorities volunteer some types of information to the public, they might not necessarily disclose the type of information that the state needs on a state level disclosure.
And taking it looking outward as far as damage that can be done. So there's really no way for the public to know if these DDAs are using this TIF money for the wrong things or more money than they're entitled to?
I think this is ultimately the big question in local economic development. You know, do specific types of policies work? Do TIFs work? Do they deliver as it says on the tin in many ways? And in the hardest thing for government and analysts, for that matter, who evaluate these policies, is not being able to in the case of TIFs in Michigan, because we simply don't have the data to run the analytics to say, was this a good way to appropriate money from what otherwise could have gone to the general fund? And there are many distressed communities up and down the state who might have benefited from that money being available in the general fund rather than being siphoned off for these special purpose districts.
And we know that there is some concern. We know California, they've been abolished, and Chicago has looked at them and demanded more transparency, hasn't it?
Yes, when Rahm Emanuel came into power, one of his first courses of action was to appoint a task force to look into this issue of TIF governance in Chicago. And one of the lessons that I think Michigan could learn from this, albeit at the state level, this is not, Chicago is not Illinois.
We certainly
have to be very careful there. But at the same time, one of the recommendations for TIF governance in Chicago was to have more transparency, more disclosure, and more standardization so that people can make meaningful comparisons.
Well, we know State Representative Ellen Kohl has introduced a bill in Lansing to reform the way TIFs are done in Michigan. What would it do?
It would, I think, my first reading of it, and it was announced on Thursday. I've gone through the 89 pages of it. It's as with any government reform, the devil's ultimately in the detail. But my reading of it is it would introduce a much needed consolidation of the legislation, and with consolidation, a certain amount of streamlining of the process. I think it would enable the state to have a better way of enforcing compliance, because right now the state really can't do anything to enforce compliance.
They can't.
So it really is no punishment to communities who don't report.
And really, the DDAs, what do you believe they owe the public in terms of transparency?
They owe the public a meaningful set of numbers that we, the people, know what they're up to. And ultimately, the government officials can then say, this has worked or this has not worked. This has been a good use of public money or it hasn't. And as such, our research doesn't take any sides. We're just saying that more information and facts is always a precondition for good public policy. You can't make policy on the basis of special interest representations.
And what are you hearing? How likely do you think Representative Kohl's bill is to make its way through the House and to clear the legislature.
Oof. That my crystal ball is very cloudy on that. I think the political process has its own risks in general. I mean, we see this in Washington. We have certainly seen this in Lansing to some extent. I think the bill has many merits. It is a great bipartisan effort, I think. And I think rational people ought not to object to it, because I really think it helps address so many historically grown issues in Michigan, because TIF legislation dates back to the early 1980s, and there has never ever been, in that sense, a type of cleaning out of the house, as it were. And I think one of the issues with new legislation is always that people might fear that this is additional legislation, etc., and that there is sort of a false trade-off between good and bad regulation. I think it would certainly go in the direction of improving the quality of existing legislation, which is huge in and of itself.
David Bieri, Assistant Professor of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Michigan, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure.